What's up, guys? It is, well, it's going to be February 27th by the time this gets out. So I am Justin Mingle. I am going to be your solo host of the Gym Therapy Inc. podcast, which is terrifying, to be quite honest with you. I did this one other time, but we talked about, oh, my belt is pinching my belly fat. Oh, God, that was not a good way to start. But I did a solo episode. We talked about Damar Hamlin a little bit, but like 30 of you watched it. A couple of you thought it was okay. But so we're just going to try a new one. This week, we're going to talk about weaponized incompetence, but I'm going to talk a little bit about what's been going on recently. We just had our coat drive. We gave away probably not the day of. We only had about 20 families come in and buy or get free coats the day of. I think maybe we had it too early in the morning. Like, we started at 10 a.m. almost. There was one family waiting for us when we got there, but most people didn't show up till about 2. We had to reschedule it. We did it later in the year than before. We still collected 600 coats, so that wasn't any fault of anybody's. But we ended up giving away about 400 total within the last week through different charitable organizations. Thank you to Angie Dongiovanni. She took about 7 bags. Kathy Moreland took about 5 bags to give away to a few people. So really appreciate her stepping up and taking them. And really just want to say thank you to everybody who did contribute. We had a sign up that same day too, to where you could win a gift certificate to Pudliner's Country Store, which is a butcher. We wanted to give away a monetary prize to somebody for liking and sharing our pages and doing that sort of stuff. But we didn't want to give away just like $100 gift card so people could go buy like Mountain Dew or something with it. We wanted to give away the butcher shop so people could buy, like, we call it, it was a meat bundle, which I'm not allowed to say meat bundle anymore because Trista got mad about me saying meat bundle over and over again. So how about this, Trista? Meat bundle. There's one last one for you. But Rosie LeVan won that gift card, gift certificate. And there was a church out in Armagh that actually donated $300 to the coat drive. We used 100 of that for the meat bundle. And we used 200 to buy coats. Heather Mingle bought a whole bunch of coats. Thank you to Nicole Rodkey and Mel Tony for showing up that day and doing some good work with us. Of course, Brantley Pavlovsky, he's the young man who put this on our plate. He's the one that gave us the idea for this. His buddy didn't have a coat last year, so we ended up raising a bunch of coats. Some of them went to the Alice Paul House. Some of the new ones I think we have left will go to the Alice Paul House. The Alice Paul House only takes new donations. So, but yes, thank you so much for being part of that, and we appreciate everything you guys have done for us. Today, you have me by myself, and my dog's pacing around. So Jerris, she's just running around. She was chasing her own tail a few minutes ago, but I think she caught it. Or no, she's just resting her head staring at me right now. But I wanted to do a class on weaponized incompetence. I made some notes. They say, my notes are one line. It says weaponizing incompetence. So I started off really true to form by not doing anything besides pulling up some Google stuff here that I wanted to talk about. It's Psychology Today. So, weaponizing incompetence. Does anybody know what weaponizing incompetence is? Well, if you do, I can't hear you because this is a one-way transmitter. So, weaponizing incompetence involves strategically avoiding responsibility by pretending to be incapable or inept at a task so that someone else helps, takes over, stops delegating the tasks to you, and in this way, the imbalance in your relationship becomes entrenched over time. For example, let's say a woman, not picking on women or men, but let's say a woman says to her husband, I'm going to change and feed the baby. Could you make dinner? In the context of weaponized incompetence, the husband may say something like, oh, I'm such a bad cook. You make dinner so much better than I. What should I make? I don't know what to do. I can't go to the store. As a result of him complaining, asking several questions, which we would never do, obviously, not to use strong, powerful women anyways, asking several questions or not cooking the meal, the woman may take on the task herself because it feels more efficient to stop delegating the cooking tasks and other tasks and just do it all together. Assault, that's assault right there. First off, you don't ever accuse me of not being able to cook, because I'm the cook in my house. We actually have a pretty good system, and I think that's kind of what this is about, because weaponized incompetence can strain relationships, whether they're at home or at work or in another place. Like frustration, it can be very frustrating. There can lead to resentment, distrust, conflict, and therefore, as this like kind of dynamic emerges, it's important to discuss it to reserve the inequality. So next I want to talk about what causes weaponized incompetence. Weaponized incompetence may occur because the person wants to avoid responsibilities, aspects of work that make them anxious or uncomfortable, or they disagree on how work is being carried out in the first place. For some people, childhood experiences and patterns play a role. For example, someone may have taken on the bulk of the childhood or bulk of the responsibilities during childhood, while another may have been expected to strive for like academic or financial success. That is very true. A lot of us grew up in the family where dad worked and mom took care of the kids. Well, now mom works, dad works, everybody works. So some of the jobs are shared a little bit differently. I know that Megan and I still have some of the semi, and again, we're not here to talk about us, but some of the semi traditional things, like she does the dishes where I do the mowing and stuff outside. She makes fun of me because she says all I do is bounce, and my boobs just bounce on the tractor all day long. But I also would invite her to change the belt whenever it breaks, because taking care of the lawn has a lot more to do with just riding around in a tractor, first off. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But are there other explanations for incompetence? Yes, incompetence isn't always intentional. Sometimes it's a necessary skill or tool or piece of knowledge, or a piece of knowledge is missing. At work, for example, slow technology or bottlenecks may prevent employees from completing their work faster. Asking a coworker or a direct supervisor about their experience and being open with their response can help shed a light on some potential barriers. So not all incompetence is malicious or narcissistic. But how do you address weaponized incompetence? To address weaponized incompetence, both individuals should openly discuss the situation with each other. It's best to begin the conversation with curiosity and non-judgment rather than blame. I think that's very important. Sometimes whenever you go to your spouse to talk to them about something and they know they've been lacking or struggling in a certain way and you ask them about it, a negative reaction can happen because it actually hurts their feelings, because you kind of hit a sore spot. So make sure you're going into this stuff with an open mind. And it's also important to periodically assess progress and make adjustments as needed to make sure that equality is achieved over time. And mindfulness will also help address weaponized incompetence. In some instances, incompetence can be seen more as like mindlessness, as in someone's just not with it. And mindfulness can therefore present like a version of like an antidote. But paying attention to the present moment can help people notice previously invisible emotions, motives, and relationship dynamics. Mindfulness can also encourage collaboration and acceptance of the differences. Now, can therapy help address weaponized incompetence? Yes, a mental health professional can help people recognize and overcome weaponized incompetence. And in the case of a relationship, couples therapy could be especially beneficial in helping both members of the couple to understand their behavior, change your behavior patterns, and sustain your progress over time. So, what I want to talk about now is how some partners try to weaponize incompetence. The key term, weaponized incompetence, again describes what happens when one person gets their way via incompetence. One example could be a couple whose roles and habits clash in the fields of marriage and parenthood. And so there's these two people, Sujin and Jay. They've been married for 7 years. Sujin came to this psychologist because she was kind of at her boiling point. Her and her husband both work. They're both parents, both the same two children, and they live in the same house. He knows as much as she does about raising the kids, but she always ends up doing more, in her words anyways. In this case, is this a case of weaponized incompetence? Well, you kind of want to investigate a little bit further. Sujin and Jay always defaulted into a pattern. She would take the lead in outlining what was needed to be done with the family schedules, like packing kids' lunches and planning for after-school activities. At first, he would follow along, but often would forget key steps and would text several times over simple tasks and just not know what's going on. She would say, "I just want everything done right, so I'm going to do it myself." Becoming exhausted, angry, you know, keep going over and over and over again. Throughout joint therapy sessions, there was a better sense of their backstory. Both had grown up in Southern California. Both were first-generation Korean-Americans, and Sujin was a daughter and a sister, and she was always expected to defer to her parents and older brother, and a habit of excessive responsibility for and deferral to others had become her subconscious default pathway. So basically, she wasn't allowed making a lot of decisions in the first place, so she just did what she was told and listened to everybody else. Now, he, on the other hand, was raised in a home where the focus was on him. And he was the eldest, and he was the firstborn son, and he had academic and professional excellence, but not much else. His mother was the manager of all household and childhood duties. His father was an engineer, was the breadwinner, and he was kind of prone to volatile outbursts. And when he was upset, the outbursts never really got resolved, but they just flared, simmered, and went away and dissipated without a clear resolution. So as you can see, she was submissive and listened, and he never really had to take responsibility for his own actions because no one in his house ever took responsibility for their own actions. How about that? The older you get, realizing some of the stuff that happened to you as a child, and something happened to your parents as a kid, and why things never really got resolved. That was just, well, that's just the way we are. And that's one thing we're trying to teach you guys, is things don't have to be the way they are just because that's the way they were. But their early life roles and habits were now clashing in the fields of marriage and parenthood. Sujin was back in a role of taking care of the household responsibilities, but between work and motherhood, she built up this resentment towards Jay to where there's a tipping point. And Jay was also replaying the old script of household duties where they weren't on his radar, so he put minimal time into considering how to do it all. He also felt that kids' daily schedules were too rigid. I mean, who hasn't had a different opinion with their spouse on how to... I mean, we have a dog. We just raising our dog. There's different opinions on. But he wanted to do what she said, so he carried everything out in this kind of half-assed way. But this failure to engage directly was only adding fuel to the fire. To undo this cycle, Sujin had to see the ways in which she was replaying her childhood script also, taking on more than her share, not expecting that she could effectively ask for what she needed. Her old patterns of feeling resentment but still doing the work was reinforcing Jay's apparent inability to effectively manage their home life. And this is like two peas in a pod, and you just put two types of personalities together that feed off of each other's ineptitudes or negativities, and it just gets more volatile and more volatile and more volatile. Now, this seems to be a very innocent, but these are the things when you add in alcohol, drugs, whatever, bad habits, poor diet, not taking care of yourself, not going to the gym. You add these sorts of things in, and these can become really volatile. He also, though, realized that he'd been hesitant to voice his own ideas on how to manage family life. Just because he didn't have to do it when he was younger didn't mean he didn't want to do it. He wanted to be more relaxed with the kids. about the foods they ate and what they took for lunch, and easing back on the number of after-school activities by trying to avoid conflicts, he silenced his own thoughts and now saw that he sees his ideas deserved equal discussion, and she was willing to listen. He also became aware that, unlike what he'd seen in his parents' relationships, he needed to strike a balanced partnership in terms of household and kid duties if they were going to make progress as a couple. Now, they made a plan to sit down every Sunday afternoon and jointly create a list for the week, where she wanted to give household planning to be a joint venture, not one where she was giving directions like a traffic cop or just some mindless drone. Jay, for his part, wanted to take a step of directly expressing his own ideas on the back of the kids' schedules. It was a happily ever after starter. The change in the relationship dynamic took practice and repetition, since this was a new skill for each of them. Soojin had to stay consistent about not overworking at home, and Jay had to kind of squelch his tendency to withdraw in the face of conflict. But over time, both began to get more competent and use their voices early on, advocating for what they wanted and truly listen to each other as a person. Now, that is the best case scenario, is whenever you can work something out with your spouse and you guys can come together and figure out a way to move forward. But there's also a lot of narcissism and weaponizing incompetence. So recognizing weaponized incompetence is kind of tough, because a lot of times it happens subtly, and sometimes the person doesn't even know they are doing it. They just get so caught in this pattern of, I don't know how to do things, somebody else does stuff for me, so blah blah blah. So the impact is often only felt over an extended period of time, as responsibilities shift from the manipulator to the manipulated. However, by being observant and aware, you can identify signs of incompetence. One is consistent inability. One of the most apparent signs of weaponized incompetence is consistent inability. If someone repeatedly fails to accomplish tasks, despite numerous explanations, demonstrations, and opportunities to learn, it might not be mere incompetence. My dog's back and she's rolling on the floor right there, if you can hear her. Nope, over here. Come here, bud. What you doing? How was your nap, huh? How was your nap? If someone repeatedly fails to accomplish a task despite numerous explanations, demonstration, and opportunities to learn, it might be not be mere incompetence. The key here is the persistence and the inability despite ample chance for improvement. Sometimes you kind of want to wring someone's neck because they can't figure stuff out, but you might want to look and see how challenging is the task in the first place and how capable is this person of doing it. It's like a person stuck in a loop of failure and they don't seem interested in breaking it, which leads to tasks that inevitably fall onto somebody else's plate. And that's why it sucks in a relationship, but can suck in the workplace too. Selective incompetence is another red flag. That's a big one. Like, I can't do this now, but I can do it later because I want to later. And when you're dealing with people that have some mental health issues, people with ADHD can be very hard to deal with. I say ADHD, but there's certainly a bunch of different mental health diagnoses out there that can make people harder to work with, because in their own head it's like, I'm not incompetent, I just don't know what I'm doing right now. Like, I can do it sometimes, but right now I can't. This stuff often occurs when an individual seems unable to perform specific tasks while displaying competence in other areas, often ones that they find more enjoyable or less burdensome. For instance, they might claim they can't understand how to do laundry correctly, but have no trouble assembling like intricate pieces of furniture or playing like complex video games, or like you separate the whites and the reds and the this and the that, but you can't figure out how to do that, but you can put together a puzzle that's Coca-Cola bottles that are 75 different shades of red. Their incompetence conveniently appears only in tasks they want to avoid, and that's a clear sign of manipulation. The lack of initiative. What? Another hallmark of weaponized incompetence is a distinct lack of initiative. People employing this tactic will rarely show any interest in learning new skills or improving their abilities in areas where they claim incompetence. They don't make an effort to grow. They don't make an effort to change. Instead, they rely on others to complete tasks for them or to rectify their dumb shit mistakes. This lack of initiative extends beyond the simple desire to avoid certain tasks. It's a strategic move to ensure that others are continuing to pick up their slack. Addressing weaponized incompetence is only half the battle, because the real problem is after it's addressed, what happens. It requires some patience, some tact, some assertiveness, and there are some strategies to help you out with this manipulative behavior effectively. Open communication, the first step towards addressing it is open communication. Many times it's the cornerstone of addressing any issue you might have with the other person. And this is definitely a case of when you come up against weaponized incompetence, it's essential for you to express your concerns about this behavior, but in a manner that is assertive and not confrontational. The delicate balance ensures that the conversation remains productive and focused on the issue at hand. Sometimes you want to wring somebody's neck for not being able, for them pretending like they don't know how to do something, but you also have to know your audience. Ma'am, sir, are you just being an asshole to be an asshole to manipulate me, or do you really not know what's going on here right now? Because that can be super, super frustrating, and that's something else. For instance, you need to articulate your feelings and how this person's consistent ability or unwillingness to perform tasks affects you and potentially others around you. For instance, if this behavior is in a team setting, it could be disrupting workflow, causing undue stress for other members. But being assertive means standing up for your rights and expressing your thoughts, feelings, and beliefs in an open, honest, and direct way. Focus on the behavior and not the person. Don't attack them for the way they live their life. When communicating your concerns, it's vital focused on what they impact rather than the person themselves. Personal attacks or criticisms can put the other person in a defensive, potentially escalating situation and kind of hinder the resolution. Caesar Milan says, when you talk to a dog, my dog's running around here not listening to me, but you have to talk in a calm, assertive energy, and I feel like that's how you have to talk to people whenever you're going to confront them about this stuff. Instead of saying things like, you're always avoiding it, try to saying things like, when tasks are consistently not completed, it adds to my workload and causes me to have delays in my successes. This approach kind of highlights the effects of the behavior without directly blaming the person, making them more likely to engage in constructive dialogue. Encourage productive conversation. The goal is to open communication in the context to encourage productive conversation. Said that twice. You want to foster an environment where the other person feels comfortable acknowledging their behavior and discussing ways to improve. By focusing the behavior and its impacts, you're inviting them to view the situation from your perspective, which can lead to greater understanding and cooperation. Set clear boundaries. We talk about boundaries every single week. Trista would love this one. But we set boundaries every week. It's a crucial step in addressing weaponized incompetence. Setting clear and firm boundaries is an integral part of addressing weaponized incompetence. Establish what tasks are other person's responsibility and what you expect from them, and resist the urge to intervene even when it's easier. The first stage of setting boundaries is defining responsibilities. Each person should know exactly what the tasks are they are accountable for, and this leaves no room for ambiguity or excuses. Explicitly state what tasks are theirs and what's their responsibility, and ensure they understand what is expected of them. This clarity can act as a deterrent for weaponized incompetence, since it becomes harder to feign ignorance or ineptitude when the tasks are clearly defined. Resist the urge to intervene. Maintain firmness without harshness. Ooh, good one. Don't be a dick. Either side. Consistency enforcing boundaries is key to when boundary setting. Once you've established the boundaries, consistently enforce them. If exceptions are made or boundaries are not upheld, it can send mixed signals and undermine the entire process. Consistency reinforces the importance of boundaries and communicates that they are not optional or negotiable. What I'm reading from is Psychology Today, but I think that is pretty good. You want to ensure the understanding before you give them total independence, but also constructive feedback and learning from mistakes is really important too. I think that's it. I think that's all I want to cover, because that was a lot to take in at one time. And to be honest with you, I'm starting to repeat myself, I think, a little bit. So we'll be back next week. We have some couple people coming that I'm pretty excited about. Trista's doing some good work. We met a few people this last weekend. We'll talk about that some other time. But don't weaponize your own incompetence. Set boundaries. Don't let people take advantage of you through their incompetence. And it's really tough when you're in a relationship with someone who is narcissistic, because they can kind of do this stuff to you when you don't realize that it's happening, and there's gaslighting and other things like that going on. So hopefully you learned something from this. I'll put the link to the Psychology Today in the show notes, and the other website I used is from a woman named Carla Corelli, Healing After Narcissistic Abuse. I think narcissism is something we can all learn from. So my dog's barking at me. It is time for dinner. It's been a nice Sunday afternoon, and we'll see you guys on Tuesday. Thank you. Love you guys. Go outside.